IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 92 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
This is Carl, joined by Ryan and Dave, and we have a very special end of year program. We're actually going to do a video. So if you would normally just listen to the podcast, which of course you normally do, go check out killingit.smallbizthoughts.com. We're going to post the video there. And of course, it'll be on YouTube and so forth and so on.
So people who haven't heard our podcast can see a video version of it and see us in our festive gear.
I have my Happy New Year thingy on, which I'm going to take off because it's not particularly comfortable. But I have kittens with lightsabers.
I do, and a wrapped Christmas tree. And I redid all the lights in green and red. And I've got my Santa hat on.
Dave's got his Santa hat. I have an ugly sweater mug and some Crown Royal that I'm going to put in there.
Oh, very nice.
Just enough to get me through a half hour podcast.
Which means, minute two is scholarly and interesting.
Exactly.
Minute 29. You guys got to stick around for that one.
Oh, there's Sharon with her drink and Erlen.
All right.
Merry holidays.
There we go.
I'm drinking my Santa Clausmopolitan.
All right.
That is a very appropriate
way. I have the same outfit on that I had on last night when I made the video. Completely figure.
See? That's a very
tall hat you got there.
The official holidays.
It is.
Cheers to you guys. I got to get on my only Christmas party event of the season.
See ya. We're doing our wrap-up show and making a video of it. So
today we have a different kind of podcast because normally we do three people, three topics, 30 minutes. But this time we wanted to sort of talk about some of the technologies that, we've sort of harped on all year. And, we've been doing this year and a half, I think. And the one thing that defines this show to many people is the race for the great burrito delivery.
Oh, it's all about the burrito.
That's how it began.
Let's start with that. Like, where are we with delivery? I mean, 2020 was the year when I never did DoorDash before. The only thing I ever had delivered was Chinese food and pizza.
So rebaselining for people who may not remember what we're talking about here, the debate is, the ultimate debate is, how will you get your burrito? Will your burrito arrive via automated driverless robot, or will it be delivered via flying autonomous drone?
Like a drone versus a robot.
Which will happen first?
And
I have been betting on the drone, and I still have the emotional connection to that one. I've seen a lot more use cases getting close with the robot. So it's still a horse race.
Right. Well, and the thing that gets me is it's been a year and a half. Like, where the hell's the burrito?
I mean, exactly.
Yep. I don't think any of us would have thought that somebody wouldn't have won this bet by then.
I live 2 miles away from a zone where I could get an automated burrito delivered to my house. Like, I am closer, I think, than anybody on this one.
Close, but no cigar.
I am slightly out of range for the test that's happening in Fairfax City. They have automated autonomous vehicles that deliver food via app. So I'm really close.
Close to me is Save More, this line of grocery stores. They are testing automated delivery vehicles that tootle down the street.
Yep.
But not down my street.
And also up here in the Great Pacific Northwest, the folks at Amazon are continuing to do very interesting experiments around their drone delivery. But I think to make this an intelligent grown-up conversation instead of just the three of us going, I want my burrito, because that's what it is. We don't want to go out for a burrito. The lesson I think that 2020 taught us was that no matter what the endpoint delivery is, there is a financial and operational infrastructure that was not in place a year and a half ago, and it had to be put in place before you could just randomly start sending out these autonomous vehicles. I think, to your point, Carl, with all of the delivery realities that we had to innovate in 2020, I think that makes our happy world of drone and or robot delivery much more scalable than it would have been otherwise. So
we've crossed the threshold on people advances. People being used to automated delivery. So 2020 proved for us that like I can get anything sent to my house.
I can push a button and food shows up.
Food shows up, groceries show up, anything that I might need shows up.
With a human.
Right. And yes, we're doing it with still with a human, but I think we've culturally made a big leap in terms of thinking about that. And I think people are going to be very different on the way they approach that. And now it's going to be about optimizing that supply chain. Like, how can I get those things to you in the most efficient way? The best for the food, the best, cheapest delivery mechanism. That'll be the stuff that drives this to how do I get my burrito?
One of the reasons I love this discussion is there's lots and lots of other stuff involved in it. You know, I always like a complicated view of the world. So part of this is somewhere along the way, I think fear of robots has diminished in 2020. I think that resentment of automation has probably taken a notch down. But at the same time, the recession and a whole bunch of people being unemployed delays my need to save money on robot delivery when I've got some human being who will do it for $8.72 an hour.
Well, and we're going to have to figure out how to handle when robots are cheaper, that the robots are coming for your job more than anything else in some corners of the economy, in some sectors of employment. And that question we do need to, as a society, address.
Yeah, but we have answered many of the very sticky infrastructure questions, right? I think that's been one of the takeaways. I don't believe, even when in a happy, hopefully very near future, we can all go back outside again and go to restaurants and go to grocery stores and never again think twice about the bad world of 2020. Once we get there, I don't think that food and other deliveries will go away. I think that's one of those things. It had to happen. It did happen. We realized, wait a minute, I like pushing a button and having groceries delivered to my house. I'm not going to go all the way back, but we will have some endpoint technology things still to do. My issue is I live in a neighborhood that is, well, we're very close to the coast here, and as is the want, there are very many, very steep hills around this part of the world. And we got a note just the other day because it didn't snow here, because it rarely does that, but it froze after a very large rainstorm. And we were given a note about, please keep an eye out for your elderly neighbors who are not able to get out of the neighborhood because the last, 90 yards of the street out of our neighborhood is almost at a 45 degree angle. And I'm thinking a drone solves that problem much faster than an autonomous robot does. So while it was very frustrating to not be able to get out of the neighborhood, it did give me further near-term hope that a burrito is coming to my house.
You just see the robot that has to sand the road in front of it so it can get up the driveway.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting piece of it. The other thing that occurs to me is how many people will say, well, I do actually like this more than the old way. Because for me, I love to go to eat out at restaurants. Like that's my idea of a good time. And I will do that as quickly as I can without having to think about it.
Well, you've hit on something that I think a lot about for the transition, which is I think people are going to be much more deliberate about their use of time. I think that the resource that has become very crystal clear during all of this is how I use my time, which is a finite resource, really matters. And I think people are going to be very thoughtful about the way they use that. For example, I do expect tons more personal travel. I do expect people to indulge in restaurants, go to concerts. But people are going to be really skeptical of sitting in commutes wasting time running errands on these things where it's like, I don't need to do those things. It clearly proved to me that I don't have to spend all of that time.
Again, there's also a question. So if everything sort of got forced in a certain direction and now it's going to notch back, does 30% of it stay? Does 70% of it stay? You know, I think Dave, you and I are almost exactly opposite on this, because I think 30% of the change will stay and 70% will go back. I think people will go back to the offices. They'll go back to the old ways. They'll go back to commuting. A lot of people liked the way things were up until a year.
Well, I see. And I think it's more selective. So I think the problem with saying 70-30 is that I'm not making the decisions in the right places. So for example, I would qualify and say, if you're younger, I think you're going to want to go back to the office. Why? There's a social element. You want to meet people, that you're early in your career, your ability to get promoted is really tied to that. But you're older, you're family driven, you're going to not want to rotate back. You're not going to want to spend those investments. Like, I think it's much more selective about looking at that lens. And so a roll up is really hard for me to do, because I can say, like, I think it's going to be much more extreme in some segments that don't go back, and in others it will. Well, for example, I make a blanket, like, I think loosely, I think business travel will not come back a lot because it's expensive, but I think personal travel will come back a ton.
See, I think business travel will come back as soon as they're allowed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think people, we were having a conversation the other day with some folks about, that first conference that we all get to go to. We've been very selective about where we go. You can only go to one conference at a time, so you have to make sure you're going to the valuable ones. That first one, I don't think the content's going to matter at all. I don't think anybody's going to be like, now, is this a good use of my time to go to this conference?
I've got the perfect example.
The second one.
The three, if you go from a horribly wrong statistical analysis, right? Three hosts. I think for me, I'm super skeptical. And I bet the two of you travel. Like, I bet I'm the one going, it better be really good. That has to be like a really good use of
budget. But to Ryan's point, really good will consist of, I get to be out in the world.
Really good is another way. But I can do that other way.
My family room.
Yeah, but yeah, I'll do that other ways. I'll go travel with friends. I'll go do like vacations. I will be out in the world. But that invite where somebody goes, well, we want you to come to this conference, it's like, that better be worth my time.
See, but Dave, I think that's where you're going. Your selectivity question is the right thing, but it's not going to be groups of people or even physical locations like urban or rural. I think it's going to be very task oriented, and it will be very mixed for every single one of us, right? Like you were hinting at earlier, there are things that I will absolutely go back out and do. And there are things that I will just admit the technology and all of the conveniences, and I will never again go do those things. But as a person, I will probably go back out much more for fun than I do for work. And right, that's the problem that we have to figure out, is what are the tasks that people enjoy doing versus the tasks that they don't enjoy.
Well,
doing. It's going to be very different for different people.
I do have to say, and maybe I'm just a lonely bachelor, but I have a lot of social life by going to conferences, and I can totally see that the first few ASCII events, Channel Pro events, Tech Fest, I'm going to have a great time, and I think everybody on stage is going to have a great time, and everybody in the audience is going to have a great time.
Yeah, but here's where, and this is where I don't want to be the, I'm not trying to be the Debbie Downer, but, and I'm, this is one of my predictions for 2021, is the financial people are all going to say, yeah, we hit our numbers without all that stuff.
Well,
and so there's going to be a lot of really hard, critical things. I'm not saying zero, because don't think I'm saying zero. But people are going to have to justify a lot of things that they could be much more loose about before from an actual financial spend perspective.
I will agree with you until, and this is a cooperation and defection game, right? This is prisoner's dilemma. You have hit your numbers with people who are trapped in their basements. As soon as those people can go to an event, the people at that event are going to be the ones who get the booth traffic. They're going to hit their
number. They're the ones just there for a party, and they're not doing business.
Well, but they're drinking and signing contracts. That may be all.
I'll make it a little bit more tactical for us, right? So doing training as a line of business, speaking at events, doing consulting gigs, things like that, that we have learned that there are in fact very many things you can do remotely and can be quite effective at from a remote world, and as much as people thought that wouldn't happen. But the way that we have described this is at the point in the process where your objective is to win hearts and minds. We need to change people's minds and make them want to do the thing that we are doing. We need to be in person, because that will always be dramatically more effective for relationship building, for emotional connections and interactivity. Then when it comes to reinforcement, repetition, execution, and the tactical aspects, oh, I can do all of that stuff remote, right? But I think of that in the spirit of a training program, you know, having gone from 85% in person in 2019 to post-March 2020 going to 100% remote, you feel that adaptation and you feel the agility requirements, and it's not always fun. A lot of that adaptation was necessary, but it was miserable. Going back to it, we've had the conversation looking forward into 21. Will you travel for training? If it is an ongoing thing, if it is a tactical execution question, no, because I can do that right here very effectively. Believe me, I have spent the money on building all of the digital studio capabilities to make that happen this year. But at the beginning of a program, at the start of a new year, the sales kickoff meeting, as opposed to the quarterly business review, those things where it's about hearts and minds and emotional buy-in, absolutely.
You've pretty much made my 30% argument, because the bulk, because if you think about the bulk of a training program, right, it's the maintenance, it's the ongoing stuff, it's the stuff you're going to do at scale, and you're going to do it with larger groups, and you're going to systemize it, and you're going to be able to deliver it very rapidly. You're no longer limited, right? You can do an entire worldwide organization. And thus, my statement of, I think about 30%.
And you may be right on at least that piece of it. One of the things that really stood out to me is I think 2020 will be the year where we look back and say that location independence became a piece of what we do in business. You know, the sales training thing reminded me. So my daughter's company, they normally would get together once a quarter and they would do a thing and they would have fun. And it was a team building plus, you know, quarterly report, blah, blah, blah. Well, this year, she sent me a screenshot, which I can't share because of, you know, internal blah, blah, blah. But they did a remote thing over Zoom. They did, let's make a deal. And they, people dressed up in costume, like, oh, Ryan, you're dressed like a reindeer. You know, it's your turn, right? And so they played this entire game. And she said, it turned out to actually be really, really fun. And it's the kind of thing where people started saying, well, maybe we won't go back to the office. But of course, they know they all will. That's the nature of their business. But, you know, we have learned, maybe it's 30%. We have learned some piece that we can do a lot more remotely than we thought we could a year and a half ago.
Yeah, yep. That gets into what I think is, well, so it's the two sides of my macro prediction for 2021. On the one side, what I will refer to as the everywhere enterprise, location independent, digital parity, full collaboration capabilities, et cetera, right? I think we learned that lesson, that you do not have to be in the office next door in order to work effectively with people, as long as you've got access to the data and the tools and the ability to communicate and collaborate. And that is a net positive. I think it's phenomenal for the organization. It's good for communities. It's good for families and individuals. I think we're going to lean into that. However, the flip side of that is what I will call the human element of technology. And all of these things need to be addressed through the lens of, yeah, but are your people okay with that? Because as we lean into 21, I think one of the biggest mistakes I'm seeing in organizations right now is this thought of, well, that year was bad, but it's over. And now we're going to go into the new year and everything's going to be fine. Except that just because your people get to take a few days off here around the holidays doesn't mean that they're not still disconnected, isolated, lonely, burned out, frustrated. People are freaked out as a result of all of the fatigue from adapting to 2020. And they're going to carry that into the dark, cold days of January. And if you don't address that, people will rebel against what is otherwise a perfectly effective and acceptable use of technology. The everywhere enterprise has to be has to have humanity. It has to have empathy designed into it for employees, for customers, all of that stuff. You can be everywhere, but you got to make sure the people are okay.
All right. So in the last bits, then, what's our whiffs? What did we whiff completely on these kinds of things? People love the predictions or the, no, we're going to be the guys that actually go, where was a swing and a miss?
I did not see that this was the year that state legislators and government agencies would suddenly discover that we exist.
Okay.
I did not see that coming. I think in some ways it's actually going to be good for us in the long run, but as a prognosticator, like that, I was completely blind in that eye.
It's on my long list of ones that have been waiting to happen. The, like, you know, you've been talking about it for so long that you think it's never going to, and then it actually does.
Like the end of SBS, and then it's suddenly a surprise.
Right. I mean, I think back to on that one. It's like, well, I had conversations with senior executives back in 2012 about this topic, who looked at me, oh, it's never going to happen. And then, you know, here I am 8 years later going, well, maybe it's never going to happen. And then it does.
and then it really does. And then it's right. Everywhere.
Right. See, and the big one that I think I will point to that I did not see for many years, I have been the person saying, for the love, can we stop using fear to sell technology? Can we stop it with the FUD argument? Because that does not make people do things. And when you apply that specifically to the world of cybersecurity, my prediction at the beginning of the year was that the fear arguments would no longer work and that people would translate that into a tactical, a much more what I will call socially responsible way. I will update my security because it is my duty as a digital citizen. My organization will invest in that because we see the upside. And Dave, you've mentioned it in other conversations. When people are afraid of the vulnerabilities of digital systems, that doesn't just make them fear that one system, it makes them fear all systems, and therefore overall investment in cutting edge new technologies goes down when people are afraid of technology. And then 2020 happened, and what has been shocking to me is the amount of fear that is still A, out there, and B, working really effectively because of some just dramatic mistakes and attacks that have happened this year. I thought we would be coming into a brighter dawn of cybersecurity, of people who did it for the right reasons. And what it turned out was, no, it's actually darker than ever.
I will laugh at you because I keep having to check myself. My surprise in a way for 2020 is the, like, wow, I've gotten way more pessimistic about a whole bunch of stuff over the course of this year.
Yes. Like,
that has actually surprised me a little bit because if I get in the DeLorean and I go back 2 or 3 years, I was always optimistic and always opportunity. And now I'm way more dismissive of certain things, thinking that, oh yeah, I've got too much data that tells me that won't happen.
I can't help myself but be optimistic, because what I see, Ryan, in the shift in spending in 2020 was that clients went from saying, I'm being beat up to buy this, and shifted into, I want to invest in my technology. Because, you know, I mean, we've always had this case where we got clients who drive $75,000 cars and don't want to pay $1,000 a month for their technology, right? And now suddenly they see, wow, you guys kind of saved my bacon, and you do actually know what you were doing. And with very short notice, you made us all, you know, go home, be connected, and did it securely. And like, holy smokes, do you want some more money? Because I've got some, right?
And that's a phenomenal positive.
I think that's a huge change.
Well, yeah. And by the way, those that are doing it well are really pulling ahead. Like, you can see the haves, haves nots gap in technology, like, seriously. And this is where, like, I do get optimistic on this kind of stuff, where it's like, wow, there's some performers, like there's some people really killing it. But I also have now expanded my perception on the, like, yeah, and there's a larger group that isn't.
Well, and see, that's the thing, right? It is. I decided deliberately in a positive sense about 5 years ago to look at the upside of opportunity and what the modern technologies could do. And I have said very many times, having been in this industry for so long and seen the progress of so many things, I am more optimistic and excited about new technology today than I have ever been. And I said the same thing last year and the year before that. When we made the comment to each other about, hey, we should do a year-end episode and look at all the cool things and the bad things and all this other stuff, my first exercise, and this is kind of a byproduct of our podcasting reality, there's a running conversation of all the big ideas that keep going by, and they're not just flash in the pan and they disappear. I sat down and I said, okay, let's make a list of the big ideas, either the things that I think are really cool that could be opportunities or the things that already were but were radically accelerated by the pandemic. It has never been easier to come up with a list, and I'm looking down my screen, literally 23 macro trends that have storylines and neighborhoods of things that are individual opportunities that I foresee in 2020 as becoming not just science fiction ideas, but legit execution opportunities, from the digital twin and the practical IoT to the organizational responsibility of cybersecurity into intelligent automated supply chains, right? These are not whiz-bang technologies. And the list of, woo, that's exciting. I always say, I look back at the stuff that we used to sell, right? Like I was born in this industry selling tape backup, like the really sexy part of the industry, right? Like,
oh yeah, people love them tapes.
Not just storage, but the cool part of storage, tape, right? Like that was the cool thing. I look back at some of the things we sold 20 years ago, and every now and then I go, wow, I kind of feel a little bad I charged that much money for the things that we were selling back then, because they were embarrassing little toys compared to the rocket science that we can sell now. And it will continue to go that way. I look at 21 as a drastically positive thing. And Carl, I certainly hope that your interpretation of it is where we can lead people. Don't spend on technology because you have to. It's like buying tires for your car. Spend on it because it's going to change the world.
I want to qualify my thinking on this a little bit too, because like when I say, like, I'm super excited about all that kind of stuff, and I totally am, like, I'm on board, sign me up for the opportunity. But what I'm more realistic about now is my thinking from my perspective on who's going to actually make the leap. Like, I look and say, because I think the barrier to entry has risen enough that it means actually those that are achieving are like achieving, and they're achieving in like big, serious ways. But getting there is a lot harder than it used to be. And it requires a much more precise combination of technical and business skills that is very unique. By the way, I smile and go, I think I'm going to do great. Cause I think I've got like the personally.
I was going to say, that just sounds like job security for
right. Tech. It sounds right. really good. But what I'm being more careful about is an analysis that says who's going to be capable of doing that. And my brush has gotten a lot less broad in terms of thinking about
that. The nature of the industry certainly has changed and has become more professional. Like, there's no question about that. I think, and clearly to me, to my mind, the days of the amateur, you know, the true trunk slammer are over.
Oh, they are.
I think that the ability.
Hallelujah.
If you can't provide security first, you need to go do something else for a living. And it will literally, people will be sued out of the industry if they start making really big mistakes and all that. So, I think there's a piece of that. Let me just change subjects, only because I want to get this in before our show is over. But one of the things that really surprised me, in kind of a, if you could put a big label on a bunch of changes in 2020, I think we learned a lot about things that we didn't know about our own supply chain and about what we want to do about supply chains going forward. And, the obvious examples are toilet paper and, you know, PPP. But it's also Amazon and UPS taking on the Postal Service. Even the recent buyout of Precor by Peloton, like, that was about we need a supply chain because we're so successful.
And you haven't even brought up the big cybersecurity one that talks about supply chain. So, like, you know, there's that too. It's, look, I mean, right. And I'm, and again, I, you know, where I think you're 100% right. I think this is, and I always say in mystery, there is margin. Hard problem.
No, like, he says that. Ryan says that.
Well, Ryan says that too, but we all say it. But who's like, but that's the trick, right? Like, is these, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it and it wouldn't be that all that profitable. Well, so that's the upside.
Another thing that we have said many times, as people, we live inside the channel of the IT industry, right? So to us, when we think about supply chains, it feels foreign when somebody says you need to make sure your supply chain is all set up, and we go, wait a minute, we are the supply chain. Right, when we do not manufacture the equipment or write the software, but we sell it, we are, every industry is an interconnected set of chains where every dealer is somebody else's supplier and every supplier is somebody else's dealer, right? Like, that is, when you just do that in the technology industry, there are people who make chips that get put onto boards, that go into chassis, that go into racks, that go into data centers that host applications that eventually allow you to order a burrito from a drone, right? Like, everybody is in somebody else's supply chain. And the fact that the non-professional world is now aware that supply chains affect you in your little local situation, I think we might actually finally do something about it, right? Because we've been preaching supply chain and channel integration for years, but now the lay people are paying attention.
A lot of our preaching for the last 25 years has been just-in-time delivery. Like, we want to be able to have only exactly as many rolls of toilet paper in, you know, delivery channels as will be sold on the store shelves tomorrow. And suddenly, oh, wait a minute, or an extra 1,200 would be okay too.
Maybe, right? That's not such a great idea.
So, I mean, like, that's why I say, I think that there'll be some lessons learned. Like, we need some flexibility, but how many companies, when this is over, will go back to exactly what they were doing January 2020?
All of the bean counter.
Is that the 70 or the 30?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think the bean counter organizations will, because they will say, this is the problem. That just-in-time philosophy makes all the accounting sense in the world. Of course you want to trim the fat and eliminate the waste and the overages, and you want to liquidate your assets so that they can move much more fluidly through the organization. I completely get that until the black swan lands and nobody can predict the black swan. That's exactly the point. I think that we will realize, well, I think the 30% will stick with you, Carl, that there needs to be inefficiency to anticipate the unanticipatable and deal with that without the human consequences. I think 70% will come back in and go, you know, we let you get away with a lot last year and the inefficiencies, and now we're going to tighten our belt and the bean counters are going to dominate the conversation, and we will put ourselves right back into terribly vulnerable to one minor disruption.
Well, let's let you know, the opportunity is in those that figure out the balance. Like, I think that's ultimately going to be, you know, that's going to be where it's at. It's the people that figure out the balance and have enough agility to stay relevant, but also have now got the bench, the planning and the preparedness for, you know, the black swan. Like, I'm going into this thinking like, we may have maybe a little bit more often than we were thinking before. And I want to be prepared for that as
well. Yeah, at least the black swan is known to exist.
Right.
Exactly. It's out there. It just might not have landed yet.
Very good. Well, no. Sadly, we are out of time, but I hope this was useful. I mean, we kind of wanted to end the year with something a little bit different, a little light, a little lighter hearted, you know?
Yep.
But we've had a great year. I mean, we put together whatever 52 shows I think this year.
We have, and this has been tons of fun. We love feedback and we love the questions, so keep those coming in because they've made a big difference. And let's keep the conversation going on that way, because we are listening to what you want us to talk about and where the direction goes, and then we'll ramble a little bit on certain debates over burrito delivery.
It could happen, but I think that the opportunity going into the new year, the original premise of our show was that we will never run out of fascinating things to talk about of technology. I think we proved that. And then some, with some radically unanticipated developments in 2020, I don't think 2021 needs to have a black swan in order to be fascinating, because the things that are already out there that have a business case that look really exciting and cool, so many of them that nobody's going to run out of cool things to do. Technologists should not fear for their job security.
Exactly. No. With that, we wish you a very happy new year. We thank all of our sponsors and all of our listeners. And we had a great 2020, believe it or not. And we'll have an even better 2021. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
This has been episode 92 of the Killing It.
Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.